This is P.S. You're Wrong, the podcast where we talk trash about the things people love to hate and hate to love, and we're your hosts, Shelby and Matt.
Yes, and this is rom-com week on the podcast.
Yes. We're here to talk about...
love.
Two movies. Not a Sydney Sweeney in sight. I'm sorry.
No. Shocking.
We couldn't make ourselves do... What was it about... About Time
Anyone
or All About
but
You?
You. But honestly,
Anyone But You.
I have gotten that title mixed up with The Idea of You so many times.
Yeah,
both
yeah.
of those are like non-titles. They're word salads that have nothing to do with the movie. At least The Fall Guy is a movie title.
It's
I can
very straightforward. Yeah.
Yes. It's the guy he's falling.
He's a stuntman who's falling through the air, and he's also the fall guy. Wink, wink.
And he's also falling for Emily Blunt.
I know. Chemistry galore.
So you
know,
many memes.
Okay. I know. It's hard to... I don't know why we're doing a double feature. We just like to mix it up sometimes.
Well, there's two...
Keep ourselves busy.
Two movies come out. They're both good movies to discuss.
They have thematic
through lines.
Yeah, no, for sure. For sure. I understand. I love a good pairing. I could talk forever about Fall Guy, and I feel like you could talk forever about The Idea of You, so,
I think I could talk for a good while on both of these, and I had to write a review on The Fall Guy, which is always helpful, because that means that I will hopefully remember what happened in the movie better.
Oh my gosh, I didn't see that. I need to read it. I have to put on a Google alert for you or something. I only ever read what you post to your stories.
Mm. Well, I mean, that's kind of you, because I feel like I post things and I really expect no one to read them. So,
generous. No, I hit every link I see on your feed, babe. It's there.
I'm not sure I believe that, but thank you.
I even read, what was the weird one you did? Oh, I read your Drag Race one, even though I did not know anything you were talking about. And, you did another review, and I was like, I disagree with everything you're saying. What was that?
What would that a movie have been? Review? Dune.
Maybe Mean
you
Girls.
You didn't like Dune.
Probably Mean Girls.
Mean Girls? I thought Mean Girls was sort of fun. But did you hate it? I can't remember. We talked
no,
about
I
that
liked
on the
it,
podcast,
but you didn't.
Though.
You were like, oh, it's fatphobic. And I was like,
oh, yes, that's right. I did think that it was fatphobic.
But it might have been something else. I'll have to
and
look
you were
through
like,
your,
well,
your
I don't like
again.
Fat people, so I agree with the fat shaming.
Yeah. I'm like, hello.
Ozempic much?
Yeah. No. But The idea of You is an interesting one. This is the one that's been sort of, I mean, both of them have been talked about, but I think The Idea of You had the splashier headline because it's like, oh, it's Harry fanfic. Like, it's about a boy band who falls for an older woman. It's like literally just like fan fiction brought to life. And I have to say that I was fed that line. And I went into it with that line, and it wasn't until after, when I was like reading some reviews, that I realized like that is not very fair to the original author of this book that inspired the film, and I just think we should set the record straight.
Oh, wait, I didn't do any research into that aspect of this. I just assumed that it was Harry Styles fan fiction. Why? Was this...
Well, so, okay, let me... I guess
we'll start with The Idea of You and then go to The Fall Guy.
Yeah. The Idea of You was written by Robin Lee, who is a African-American writer and also an actress, I guess. I don't know. Not very well known in that regards. But she tried to write a interracial rom-com like book, and it wasn't sellable. Like, you know, publishers would be like, oh, well, we actually already have an interracial couple, so like we can't do another book that year, like this year without.
She was an actress in 50 Shades Darker and 50 Shades Free, which are in and of themselves
fanfic.
So she's really living in a fanfic universe. Yeah.
But anyway,
she was also
ended
apparently
up
in the movie Hotel
first...
for Dogs.
Oh, yeah, cute. Well, she's pivoting, and I admire that about her, but it's hard to be a black writer in a very white scape, and that's just a message for all of us. But she ended up publishing her first novel by switching them all to white characters. And so as she was prepping for this book, she said, one, it wasn't inspired just by Harry Styles, but that she had 23 people in her mind as she was imagining this story, like as British people like Eddie Redmayne, Benedict Cumberbatch, Tom Hiddleston, but then this idea of like a posh little boy band, as if Prince Harry and his friends had one. So that was her inspo, right? And the original book, again, that that
Nicholas Galitzine has been now cast as basically Prince Harry in two different movies then.
Yes, I know. Very full circle again. The layers continue.
So if we do have a spare biopic coming out, it seems like we know who's going to get cast.
Yeah. But a final point on this is that she was going to write it where So Lynn's character is a black woman, but then ultimately stepped back from that and decided, you know what, this would add a layer to it that I don't want to, like with the young white boy and an older black woman. And so she casted them as white and was ultimately glad that the film continued to do that too. But it is interesting that it's this black author who's been like toying the line and trying to get like, you know, recognition. And the only way she finally like broke through to the public was by this pivoting of like, oh, it's a Harry Styles fanfic. And I think that, you know, lends it to itself. But the way I pictured it was like a, yeah, sort of a 50 Shades of Grey thing where this housewife had too much time on her hands, wrote a literal fanfic and then realized, oh, that can be published. And then got a publisher. But it's actually more respectable than that.
I mean, I guess while you're sitting around the set of the 50 Shades of Grey movie, you do kind of have to ask yourself, like, could I do this? Could I get the money for this project?
Yeah. Yeah.
I think that also makes sense as to why Gabrielle Union is a producer on this movie then. She was one of the early sort of like add-on people. And then Anne Hathaway bought the rights to it at some point and got involved.
Anne Hathaway's been loving it. I mean, it's been an interesting promo cycle because, you know, it's basically like the most unbelievable thing to me is Anne Hathaway being 45 or whatever in this movie. Like, it's just like she's too hot. She's too young. She's too fit.
Turns 40.
Oh, yeah, she turns 40. But what I'm saying is it's like, I mean, if I saw that couple come out, I was like, yeah, that makes sense. He's a lucky little boy. But I feel like suspending belief on this, like, oh, she's just a sad, like, divorcee who thinks she has to go camping because that's what sad divorcees do. That was the hardest pill for me to swallow. I was like, girl, there is absolutely no way you are feeling sorry about yourself. Like, you are so... She's just so beautiful. It's just I can't get over that. Okay. And neither could.
I mean, I love this movie so much. I think it's so good in a bunch of different ways. But Anne Hathaway is, yes, gorgeous. And I love that this press tour, like, it feels like finally everyone is like, wow, Anne Hathaway, like a style icon. She's gorgeous. She's talented. She's so good at everything. I'm like, yes, everybody, finally, like, welcome to the train that I have been on since Princess Diaries. Like, she's always been incredible. And you guys are just waking up to this fact. And like over the past couple of years, I think since Ocean's 8, we've had these like moments where she's kind of like popped again and then gone back down. But I think this is maybe the biggest success that she's had recently. The press tour has been incredible. The movie's been really well regarded. She's had a lot of like meme-y sort of moments. I'm sort of shocked that she wasn't at the Met Gala last night because that seems like a perfect place for her to appear. But I don't know what she was busy working on instead. But yeah, I think that she gives a really good performance in this. She was, I believe, also a producer on this movie and did a lot of work to sort of get it off the ground and figure out how to script it. She was the one who was in charge of casting Nicholas Galitzine to be the co-star, and they just have such great chemistry. But I think, so we have talked about like age gap movies on the podcast before. Generally, I feel like we hate them. Mm-hmm. And I think that part of the reason why this one works for me sort of as a rom-com is because it doesn't feel like there is that age gap as much. Like, yes, she's turning 40 and he is 24. So there's a 16 year age gap between them. But it's like, one, she doesn't look that old. So, I mean, there's that going on. But also it's like her character like got married so young because she was pregnant and then sort of is like coming out of this divorce. And I think it's less about like, oh, she's this dowdy housewife who like doesn't know what to do with herself, and more of like, she never really had a young adulthood. Like, she had this child so quickly.
Okay. I mean, she was 25 when she had the kid. So, was like, she? Let's just calm down, okay?
Like, I think, but I think that she, like, yeah, I think she's, like, sort of, I don't know, liking a chance to, like, be young again rather than, like, being this frumpy old person. Like, that's not the vibe I really got. Because she works in, she's, like, runs an art dealership and, you know, it's, like, very cool and hip, I think, mostly. But she's just, well, like, not necessarily wanting to date a 24-year-old pop star.
Right. So you're saying that – I'm just confused. I'm confused. So you're saying that you don't mind the age gap because she's cool.
Well, no. I'm saying I don't mind – well, I don't mind the age gap because I do think, like, it seems like that they are, like, kind of, like, closer together on the spectrum than, like, some of these age gap movies we've seen where it's, like, clearly, like, some old man, like, in a – you know, being obsessed with like the youth of this young person. Like, there's not the sort of like succubus kind of quality going on here that a lot of these age gap movies have. But also it's like, usually the man is the older one. Usually the older one has all of the power. And in this dynamic, it's like the woman is older and the younger person is the celebrity. They're the one who has all the power. And also they're the one sort of driving the relationship. Like, she's almost reluctant to get involved in it. I mean, like, not really, but like sort of. She's not like clamoring and chasing him down. Like, he's the one who's sort of like inviting her to things, and she's like, are you sure? Like, what is going on?
I could be your mother.
Right, exactly.
I mean,
did
I
you
think
not like
I
this
think...
movie?
No, I liked it.
I thought it
I
was
didn't
great.
Love it.
I loved it.
I know you loved it. I know. You got a blind spot, and I respect that. Okay? We all have them.
I don't have a blind spot, Shelby. I went into this very neutral. I wasn't planning on liking it.
Yeah.
I could have not liked this movie. There's one movie with Anne Hathaway that I haven't liked.
Yeah, it could have been this one, but no, she just has such deliciously... formed shoulders and toned arms and gorgeous,
but she
colors,
has saggy boobs at one point, remember?
She has such sad saggy boobs. Yeah, she can't wear her bikini around her 20-year-olds. I'm coming across salty, but it's more of just funny. I mean, it is like a double standard, right? But I agree. I think the icky level of a age gap comes with the power dynamic, and in a patriarchal sexist society, having a man date down, I think, says a lot about what the man wants, prioritizes, and manipulates. And, like, call me a hypocrite. I don't care. I stand by that. And I think this movie's interesting because it tries to, like, make that claim, because she is left by her husband for a younger woman. And so she's like, well, am I the hypocrite for now dating a younger guy? And it's like, well, you didn't cheat on your husband with him, first of all, so you're good. But also, yeah, society's unfair. And I think that the movie playing with that was sort of like interesting, ultimately unnecessary, but it was sort of like, I think my issue with this movie, which isn't really an issue because it wasn't like I actively hated this movie or like I didn't enjoy the experience of watching it. I just don't think it was like revolutionary by any means. And I felt like the chemistry for me was sort of like okay, what are you guys seeing each other? Like, what are you both getting out of this? I think the real problem of this film is that, and I can't believe I'm saying this, I really can't, I don't think it spent enough time giving the boy more of a character.
No, I like agree with that to a certain extent. Like, there's a lot, like, I feel like her character we know a lot about, his character we obviously know less about.
Yeah,
I thought it had sort of Notting Hill energy in some regards, with, because in that movie, like, Julia Roberts is obviously the famous actress, and then Hugh Grant is sort of like, you know, invites her to all of these things. But I think in that we get a better sense of, like, her kind of trapped in this world in some regards.
Yeah, yeah. Where, which makes her interesting and makes the relationship, like, the tension more, like, believable, and the internal struggle is the fascinating piece. Whereas this is, like, pretty boy wants girl, is sad he can't get it, you know?
Yeah. But I do think that it, like, works well in spite of that.
You know what it is,
as
though,
far I as, think, like, a little rom-com goes, I'm like, oh, this is, like, very enjoyable and entertaining.
A little spicy, a little cute. I just think that the boy band, and especially in today's world where we talk so much about, like, oh, child stars and, like, you know, all of this, like, pressure on a young performer, especially when the parents are dependent on them financially. I'm not saying this had to turn into a drama. I'm saying that even just looking at Harry Styles in the boy band era, especially as they were getting older and deciding that they didn't like it anymore, I think that is more interesting and, like, would have been fun to play with. Like, oh, is Harry thinking about going, you know, is, what's his name, August Moon thinking about going, or no, that's the band
name.
That's
the band. His name is
Richard
Hayes.
Hayes going solo. Like, I want to know. I think there could have been more fun with the band itself, but instead they really only float around to, like, make her self-conscious at the pool one time. And he's, like, sort of wanting to write his own stuff, but it's not clear if he's not being allowed to or if it's, like, a different sound he wants to go in. And so it just kind of felt like a rom-com, like a Disney, a DCOM style personality trait where it's like, see, I strum a guitar, I am tortured. And I just think that the boy band element, especially thinking of these, like, posh Brits and this idea of just being picked from a, you know, bulletin board of boys who applied, I think that could have been, like, more fun to play with. Like, give
100%.
Give me a wildly possessive, like, manager, or, like, you know, I don't know. I just wanted the tension to be more than, oh my gosh, this bubble's gonna burst, isn't it? Because, like, of course it is.
I mean, yeah, I 100% agree with that, because I think that we have seen time and time and time again that, like, every single one of these boy bands has all kinds of sort of nefarious things going on behind the shadows. And this mostly was very sanitized and sort of, Disney Channel movie-ish. Like, you have, like, there were some girls kind of floating around, and, like, I guess they're, like, drinking at a couple of points, but it's like, somebody in this boy band, like, either has a drug addiction or, like, they are having all of these girls over. Like, there's dark things going on, and not
or
that
they,
we,
like,
necessarily
hate each other.
Like, needed to completely get into that, but there definitely should have been some kind of more tension, and I think that would have helped his character development at all. Because really, it's like, what do we know about him other than he's in a boy band and he really likes her? There's not really a lot of other defining qualities.
He's really sad. He likes when no one knows him.
Yes.
Which I think is, you know, the weight of fame and all that is, like, it's an interesting problem. I just feel like when it's handled so, like, whatever, like, I'm like, okay, like, I don't care, like, that this isn't going to work out. You're 24 years old. You'll be fine. Mm-hmm. But I do want to talk about the meet cute, because I think rom-coms, this is like the make it or break it moment, is like the run-in, the setup. And I'm curious, like, how you felt about this, because for the uninitiated, she's going to go on a solo camping trip, but then her deadbeat ex is like, JK, you've got to take our daughter and her friends to Coachella, but I have special backstage passes, like a VIP tent, which, Matt, I understand is your dream now. And so that's how she goes. And she's like, I don't even like this. Like, I'm just going to read a book at Coachella. Like, I'm just going to read a book. But first she has to go to the bathroom. And so she wanders out and sees a sea of trailers. And I guess homegirl has never seen a behind the scenes like movie set and just picks one to walk into. And it's his. It's Hay's trailer. And, you know, as a movie setup, it was cute. It's silly, of course, but it's cute. It's a cute idea. It's very silly, but I wasn't mad at it.
No, I liked the meet cute, and I felt like it. I could relate to her because of all the things, like, I love activities. Like, I'm a big extrovert. Like, but of the things that I like would hate doing, I feel like Coachella seems like a mild nightmare to me. And if I was an adult who was forced to like take a teenager there. And it's like the teenager doesn't really want you around. And like, I could see myself being like, okay, yeah, I'm just going to go sit in this tent and read for a while. And then, you know, I like just pass the time. So I can't remember exactly how she, like why she thinks that's the bathroom. Because
she sees a woman like leave somebody's... and rub her hands together. So she's like, oh,
okay. So she thinks that's like, okay.
Hand sanitizer.
Yeah, I guess.
But then she goes into like a full like literal trailer with like makeup on the table and things hanging up. And I think if they'd played it a little bit more like, oh, bump into him right away or something. But she just comes across a little dumb.
I guess the thing is like I've never been in a VIP like area like that before. So maybe. Yeah. So maybe you're thinking like, oh, these are the VIP passes. Like, wow, this is a really nice bathroom. Like, you can just sort of hang out in here or something. Like, I don't know. Yeah. But no, yeah, that part is a little odd. But then I feel like they have pretty fun chemistry once they bump into each other and she sort of like realizes who it is. And then there's the moment where she has to like sort of talk to him again in the... like meet and greet line with her daughter, which is also sort of funny.
Ill-conceived meet and greet I've ever witnessed.
But oh, yeah, no. Well, again, it's like the stuff around the boy band like doesn't quite feel realistic. Yeah. It feels a little bit like low budget. They didn't
it
have
does not have that theater enough bound money.
Yeah, it's not like A Star Is Born or whatever where you're kind of like, okay, this all feels like it's actually behind the scenes. This again feels like an episode of like Hannah Montana where like they would have to do a meet and greet.
People are just calmly like going wherever they want and just like no order.
Right, and the whole thing also lasts like 10 minutes. You know, there's like six people. I did think the idea was funny though of like, oh, the daughter used to be really obsessed with this band, but isn't really anymore. But the dad doesn't realize that. So he buys her these meet and greet tickets. And her friends are sort of like, okay, I guess we got to do this. Say hi to these people who we don't really care about that much anymore. Because I felt like that was a funny, like, sort of riff on this. Rather than have them be, like, actually obsessed with the band, they kind of aren't anymore. But I think that is another reason why the relationship works, because it's not like the daughter is jealous of the mom.
Yeah, it would have been icky.
Yeah,
because at one point the ex is like, you're going out with the boy our girl was obsessed with her whole life. She had a poster of him, and she's like, it was never Hayes.
It was Rory. She was always, it was always Rory. And I was like, that's actually incredible, because that is true. Like, my sister was so obsessed with Harry Styles in One Direction, but like, not that my mom's going to be dating any of them.
Exactly.
But
it would be weird if there was overlap, but she's like, see, I'm safe. It's the different boy band.
The thing I think we need to talk about is the ending. Because apparently, I was talking to Sierra, who has read this book. Because you haven't read this book, have you?
Oh, no.
Okay, yeah, neither did I. But Sierra said that in the, okay, so spoiler alerts, if you, you know, it's a rom-com, so you probably know what's going to happen anyways. But apparently in the book, So to explain the plot of the movie a little bit more, the two of them, like, they have this meet cute. Then he shows up at her art gallery, is sort of like wooing her. She's kind of like, what's going on? But like, doesn't put up that much of a fight. And then her daughter's away at camp for the summer. So she spends the summer sort of touring around with the boy. And obviously at some point the paparazzi catches on and everyone finds out. And her daughter is having a rough time at school because everyone's making fun of her. The paparazzi's outside of her house. The ex-husband's mad at her. You know, all kinds of things going on. And so Anne comes to the decision that she needs to break up with the boy and breaks up with him. And I guess that's the end of the book. Sort of
that's
like,
that's what it should be.
We
have
this
what it should
lovely
be.
Fling.
That's what it should be. I agree. You know what? And I stand by the author.
But I loved the end of the movie because
I don't think
in the
it added anything. Okay,
because in the movie, explain. Then it cuts to 5 years later, and she's like watching TV, the Graham Norton show, which I'm like, how did she get access to this? Because it's airing in BBC, but I guess maybe you can watch it. Anyways, and Nicholas Galitzine's on there, and he's like, well, like, I'm taking a break. My solo album just came out. Blah blah blah. I'm thinking about spending some time in LA, and then cut to Anne Hathaway, aka Selene, which is the most insane name ever, is working at her art gallery, and he walks in and has a horrid goatee, and she has this like crying sort of smile that he came back, and then that's the end of the movie.
So what did that mean to you? Like, why did you love it? Like, unironically?
Unironically. Well, because I'm like, it's a rom-com, and I guess, yes, there is something to be said about kind of the like tragic, like, oh, this was like a beautiful romance that we had for a short time, but it can't last forever sort of thing. And I do like those kind of movies. But I think if you're giving me like this kind of cheesy rom-com about falling in love with a Harry Styles character, like, I want you to be together at the end. But
yeah,
I also
it wasn't even like together. It wasn't even like a cheesy kiss. It was like they were trying to play it as a sort of like polished, you know, like,
I mean, know. I guess like, sure, would I have loved like a kiss or whatever or something? Like, yes, but I felt like it was saying like, okay, they are gonna get back together. And like, I didn't feel like it was ambiguous, like he'd showed up there and maybe they weren't. But I like that, one, she made the decision that was best for her daughter and that she broke up with him. And it wasn't, and the daughter, there wasn't that sort of moment where the daughter's like, no, like, I'm going to sacrifice myself. Like, I like that she actually broke up with him and she actually moved on with her life. But I also like the romantic idea that, you know, there might be somebody who you have something with at some point and it doesn't work out then, but that, you know, like in the future at some point, you guys can re-find each other and it's a better time for the relationship. And I do think, like, now that he's 29 and the daughter's off at college and whatever, like, okay, like, yeah, maybe now let's actually give this a proper go and see if it works out. Like, I don't know. I thought it was very,
like,
romantic
implied.
And cute.
Like, I think the ending at that cut to black where he leaves her, they're sad, but he leaves his watch, is sort of like it's like open-ended, right? Like, it wasn't like, to me, I think that ending is stronger, one, because it stays centered on the timeline we had. And the scene to come of the 5 years later is just kind of like, honestly, kind of pathetic. Like, it's like she's, I don't know. It's like, you know, it's like she hasn't moved on with her life. Like, yeah, she, you know, whatever. She's still has her business and her pretty gorgeous house, and she looks great still and has friends. But it's like, it's not like adding anything. It's just like copy and paste 5 years later. And then it's like,
well, it's,
I don't know. Like, I think she should have called him or she could have done something, or he could have, I don't know. It just wasn't a big enough romantic, like, power move that it felt earned. Like, it was just kind of like lazy to just be like, oh, see, it worked out. Like, I think they could have done it faster.
I feel like,
or bolder.
I liked that it was 5 years later, and like, he had been thinking about her this whole time and he hadn't seen her, but like,
yeah,
because they were in love, they hadn't found somebody else, and they And so they come back to each other. Like, I thought that was a very romantic ending.
I don't know. I just felt kind of like, whatever, girl. Like, it wasn't like, if you're going to do like the full cheesy, like, finale, I want kisses. I want fireworks. I want some romantic line. But instead it's like, there's a girl I want to see. And no. It's like, I'm Celine. Someone's at the door.
I agree. Like, I would have also liked a bigger sort of grand gesture at the end, you know, like more of a sort of surprise moment. Like he, you know, shows up in a more like sort of interesting way. But
also your favorite rom-com of like last year or whatever it was that Jenny Slate one where they literally never kiss. They just like, it ends with them looking at each other. And I hated that.
I know, but I think the thing with the Jenny Slate one is that like it was always trying to be like a little bit more weird, where this feels like going for like 90s Julia Roberts rom-com, like that's the energy it wants, and so that's the ending that I want from it. Like if this was trying to be something that was a little bit more like highbrow, then I think I would have liked the sort of the first ending of like a will they get back together, like we'll never know kind of a thing. But it's like the rest of it is so cheesy.
Let me pitch you an ending, okay?
Okay.
So it's her 45th birthday and her friends are like, let's go to karaoke. And at karaoke, one of them's like, oh my gosh, this is August Moon. You have to do it for old time's sake. And she's like, no, I can't. This is so embarrassing. And then he walks in and it's a callback to her singing the song he's singing to her. And then they get to make out in front of all their friends.
Yes,
and it's a musical number. So thank you, Hollywood. Call me, please.
You know I love a musical number. Yeah. You can't do this to me. Really put a musical number at the end of any movie and I'm in.
Yeah. Someone needs to use some AI or deepfake and make that the ending. Just superimpose their faces somehow. And that's a perfect pivot into the Fall Guy.
The Fall Guy, yes. Our other rom-com which I did not really realize that's what this was going to be going into it. I feel like, well.
Oh, really?
I guess one last thing about the.
The
idea of the you. Idea I was like, what is you, the name yeah. of this movie? I'm never going to remember this. This movie was released straight to Amazon Prime. So this did not get a theatrical release. I sort of think it would have done well in theaters, especially like coming off of Anyone But You doing so well. But I'm also fine with it going to Prime because it does, you know, sort of have that feel. And it feels like Red, White, and Royal Blue is like cousins. So glad they're there together.
Oh, dear.
But this is way better than Red, White, and Royal Blue.
Yeah.
And also Anne Hathaway's acting, I think, is great in it. But the Fall Guy was a massive budget movie, like cost a ton of money, has gotten a lot of promo. I feel like Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt have been doing promo for this movie like since the Oscars, you know, for like months now. I want to say this got pushed back a couple of times, the release date. It's just, you know, like been kind of everywhere and went to the theaters and did not do well this past weekend. And I think that part of that is because people did not know exactly what kind of movie it was. Like, I think that the best parts of this movie are the rom-com portions of it. I think that Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt have really good chemistry together. I think they're really funny, really witty. And I also like the sort of you know, celebration of the stunt community and stunts in movies. Yeah. Like, I think that that's also a fun angle here. But I think the promotion of the movie was sort of confusing, or at least I was kind of confused as to what it was about necessarily coming into it. It's like, okay, it's a stunt double, but there's also some sort of like espionage thing and he has to do it, but he's a stunt double, but also there's a romance element. Like,
because it makes no sense.
Yeah. It was confusing to me in the promotion of it. And then watching the movie, I was also very confused about the plot
and it made no sense.
In the center of it is a fabulous romantic comedy, I think. And I don't know if they had marketed it in that regard, if it would have done better or not, but that is what I think it is at its best.
I mean, yeah, I feel like I got that from the marketing, but maybe I just saw later trailers where they're like, it's basically him regretting not being with her or whatever. But I adored this movie. It gave me the same vibes as the similarly named like Free Guy or kind of like, I don't know. It was just like so fun. It was so bright and cheery and fun. And part of that is because Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt are basically doing some of their best work here. Like Ryan's serving full Ryan, like the Kinergy is off the charts.
He's basically Ken again.
He's like a really cool Ken.
But the main character.
Yeah, yeah. He's like a cool Ken. And he's doing it so good. His hair, I was mesmerized by it. I was like dirty, but like swoopy. I was like, oh my gosh, like this is hot. Like what is happening here is working. And then Emily Blunt was like that perfect mix of her likability but not trying too hard. Like I feel like she's had a rough go of it lately where she has to play these characters where they're a little bit like buttoned up or kind of like aggro in a weird way, like even Mary Poppins or like the Dwayne Rock boat one.
Oh, like, yeah, that was terrible.
She's just, like,
and you didn't even see that
silly
horrific movie with Chris Evans where she was selling OxyContin Florida.
No. Oh. Yeah, she hasn't been doing great. And I've always been like, she needs to go back to either being a full bitch or just like have fun. And I think this is like a really good spot for her because she just had to ooze like chemistry and riff off of this other very charismatic person. And they were able to like be really charming together and separate in their characters. And it all made this very, very bonkers story work. Like, it was as cuckoo bananas as something like, you know, Date Night, Game Night, the Issa Rae one. But I think it was elevated because it was also just like, we love movies. We love making movies. Like, let's celebrate the making of movies by making a movie. And I thought that was fun.
Yeah, so this movie is based off of loosely off of a TV show about a stunt double back in the 80s. And the only reason why I know this is because that guy who plays the stunt double in the original is also the stuntman in Big Fat Liar. And so, and he makes a cameo appearance at the end of this movie. And I was like, oh, yes, of course, the guy from Big Fat Liar. I know him. He's the one who has who operates the helicopter. Anywho, but I think that the director of this is David Leitch, who was originally a stunt double himself. So he obviously has an affinity for the stunt community, which you can very well see. And then the script is written by Drew Pierce, who has worked with Tom Cruise on some of the Mission Impossible movies. And so obviously they have a very strong stunt related background. And I'm sort of shocked that they were able to come up with the dialogue that Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt have, because I think that that is so like effortless throughout the movie. And it's really like quippy and well done. And there's so many like fun scenes between the two of them. But where I think the movie struggles is with the like plotting in general. It makes absolutely zero sense the entire time and feels very much like the sort of Mission Impossible Fast and the Furious idea of like, okay, here are the six stunt scenes we want to do. Now we have to build a plot around them rather than like, here's a plot of a movie. Let's put the stunts in.
And, yeah, but I'm like fine with it because it feels like what sort of dumb plan dumb people would come up with, and it would just like go awry left and right.
Like when you get to the end and you sort of like are able to see everything that is like see the bigger picture, it kind of makes sense. In the going through it, I was just so confused as to what was happening and why any of the characters were doing what they were doing exactly.
But that's how Ryan Gosling felt too.
Right. Well, it's just like, I don't know. I liked this movie, but it was a little bit too long for me. And I felt like what I every time that we sort of wandered in, because the general plot, I guess, is Ryan Gosling's character is a stunt double. He is the stunt double for Aaron Taylor Johnson's, like, basically like Matthew McConaughey-esque actor. And Emily Blunt is like a camera woman on this movie. Ryan Gosling has an accident and then sort of like goes off the grid and into retirement out of embarrassment, sort of. Like, it's kind of unclear, I felt like, exactly.
It's
like,
because it hurt. He didn't know who he was anymore. He made a stupid mistake. His entire, you know, career was like flashed before his eyes. Stunt work is hard. It's exhausting. It does hurt.
But then he just becomes like a valet at a restaurant. But he gets called back to this set where
it's
Emily Blunt is making her directorial debut on something that's basically kind of like a Dune Mad Maxy kind of thing called Metal Storm, which I thought that was funny. Like, all of the stuff regarding the movie I thought was pretty entertaining. But he gets called back. He thinks that she wants him to do some stunts on the movie. She actually is not aware that he's coming back, but Hannah Waddingham, who is like the agent to the producer, to the Matthew McConaughey-esque actor, is like, he's missing. We called you here to Australia from California to find him? And Ryan Gosling's like, okay, I'll go along with this.
Yeah.
And then it's like a series of him trying to like figure out where this guy is. And then we're getting involved with the mafia and the drug dealers. And now there's a dead body. And it was just like all very convoluted and bizarre. And it's like every time that Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt sort of split up and Ryan Gosling went on, you know, these like little missions to kind of try to find where the guy was, I found those parts to be much slower, and I was sort of like, okay, like, let's just get back to the romance. And then also there are a number of stunt sequences that are there for like solely the purpose of doing stunts. Like, he shows up to the guy, to the like missing actor's apartment, and his like girlfriend's there, and she's attacking him with like a saber for some reason, and there's this whole like fight sequence that kind of doesn't make sense. Like, there's this long sequence involving trying to get a cell phone back that involves like a dump truck, like tow truck iconic chase, which are all fine scenes, but I was just like, let's get back to the romance. Like, I want more of this couple.
Hard disagree. This movie was like a perfect package. It was so much fun at every angle. Like, the dumpster scene was so funny. You had the dog, and like, he was trying to get to his girl, but he like couldn't because he had to like figure this out, and he never knew. He was kind of this like bumbling idiot, but also like very talented. And so he's just like, ugh, like, I guess I'm gonna hit this car. Like, I thought it was so fun watching him sort of like wander through these hijinks and being like, what is going on? I have no freaking clue. And that worked because it was his charisma can carry any film, but two, because I think that the tension there is that he wants to protect his lost love's big movie. Like, that's the line that's fed to him by the producer. That's like his end goal, is to just like not ruin her life any further than he already has, and to hopefully be able to like win her back by doing this thing that he thinks is the thing that she needs most. And so, of course, he's going to like go for whatever, you know, he's going to do whatever it takes, because that's his odyssey. Like, that's his journey back home, you know?
Yes, I don't know.
Then it turns out that he's the fall guy, that the producer wanted him to come so that they can frame him for the accidental murder that the actor actually committed.
Yes.
Does it make sense? No, because, you know, I'm pretty sure that you can tell when a body dies. Like, that's what every crime movie / TV show has told me. So I don't think keeping it on ice for 3 days while this man travels across the globe would actually work long term. But you got your deep fake, you got your money, and you think you can figure it out. And I understand that panic. Heather is just like, well, let's figure out how to do this. Oh, he's not... We have to kidnap him, so it looks like, blah, blah, blah. Like, it doesn't make sense, but it's okay. because these people aren't criminal masterminds.
I just think that the plotting could have used a little bit of finessing and a little bit, like, a few less stunts or shorter stunts or something. It just needed a little zhuzhing for me. Like, I thought this was maybe, like, a B movie, and it could have gotten to an A movie if we'd had some finessing. And what I really want to see is Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in a movie that's, like, more of just their chemistry and less other things going on, because I absolutely loved them. Like, give me them in an actual, like, rom-com. I would love to watch that, you know?
But I do feel like imagining them in something like, I don't know, what even is a recent rom-com?
Like The Proposal or something? Like, I don't know.
Yeah, I just feel like their energy is so zany together that something like this works better, where they're like, I don't know, like it, like the context of the movie allowed them to have so much fun, like where she wants to have an argument with him in front of a whole cast while he's getting pummeled to death against a rock by aliens wielding guitar knives. And I think,
but you're telling me they couldn't have had that same exact scene, like, in a department store somewhere? Because
no, I think
in front of, like, a cashier and the woman.
I think this movie served everything I wanted, and I actually do think I do like its intentions of honoring stunt, because I think that is something that you and I have talked about. That's something that comes up with movies like Extraction, where it's like you can tell when a movie has good stunt people and it's not just, you know, shady editing or whatnot, and you can tell how much stunt work and practical stunts helps elevate a film, like in Mad Max, Fury Road, and all of that. And so the fact that they get this big budget movie, I will never, ever complain about. And I think that does elevate the film for me, even though I could agree that, like, okay, yeah, carve 5 minutes of this shootout down, or, like, you know, have Emily Blunt kick an ass for once. I don't know. But I was so enamored by this film and, like, what it was doing that I was just happy for the ride.
Like, I really did enjoy this movie. Like, I feel like I'm sounding like I didn't like it, but I really did. I think that, like, okay, let's say you, like, take out the, like, murder plot line, and it's just, like, a, you know, like, they're just working on the set together, and he's, like, ghosted her and then somehow gets hired back on, and she doesn't realize it. Now they're stuck in Australia working on this movie, and they're having to do these stunts together and, like, figure it out while also reworking their relationship. I feel like that is just as good of a movie, and if not better. And you get to watch all of the stunts, because I felt like, I guess the thing is too, like, the most interesting stunt sequences in this movie, I thought, were the ones where it's like, obviously there's a movie stunt going on because it's the Fall Guy, but also we're watching sort of how that movie stunt is made, because they're shooting, what is it, Metal, like, Storm on set.
Like the car roll in the finale.
Right, yeah, yeah. Like, I thought that car roll scene was great. Like, I liked the big sequence at the end with where all of the stunt guys are sort of, like, helping them. I think that the stunts that I liked less, or the plots that I liked less, were the ones that weren't, like, quote-unquote movie stunts, but were actually stunts, like, in the world of the film. Like, the tow truck chase and the, like, boat thing, like, and the mobstery kind of stuff. Like, I think you could have easily replaced those with something that was within the Metal Storm movie universe, and then just had it be like drama on set.
I see. Yeah, I guess I can see that.
I don't know.
Yeah, I can cede your point.
But these are nitpicky. Yeah. I feel like both of these movies were very fun.
I would rank Fall Guy far superior than The Idea of You, just as far as substance and performance and world building.
Well, the thing with I think I like The Idea of You better, and I think it sort of executes what it's been given to a fuller degree, but I do think the Fall Guy is doing a lot more, and, like, as a movie in totality, has more to offer. Like, the stunts and the performances and, you know, all of the different things going on in the Fall Guy, I think there's more of it, where the idea of you is obviously like a lower budget. And aside from Anne Hathaway's performance, I think the like crafts and stuff are like not necessarily great.
Yeah, I think
like the Coachella set is, you know, weak. Oh, I will. Yeah. One thing though that both of these movies have in common though is the music in both of them, I think, is incredible and used really well, because I love the August Moon songs. They use the Maggie Rogers Light On song perfectly in The Idea of You. And then the soundtrack for The Fall Guy is really good. And they use Swift song, I think, so well.
Iconic. Yes. A perfectly executed moment for All Too Well. I mean, I think when it comes down to it, The Idea of You, like, it was fine. It was frothy, but I just felt like they were both, like, the problem I have with some rom-coms is if they're too dumb. And I think that's where it was leaning for me. was dumb. Like, and that's okay.
The Fall Guy was like built for you in a lab, though, because I love these kind of like big action movies.
And Mother was mothering for you, so.
Right, exactly. So it's like both of these movies were like geared towards our particular tastes.
Yeah, and that's why we did a double feature.
Because big budget, like sort of like these kind of action-y movies, I feel like are like not necessarily my
favorite
genre. Where, yes, you do. Like, cut to Twister later this summer.
Oh, I can't wait. Oh, my goodness.
Like, your cup of tea.
I know. I'm so excited. And
where I'm like, you know what I'm excited for? Cuckoo.
The Planet of the Apes, the Wind of the Planet of the Apes or whatever comes out this week. But it's my birthday episode, so we don't even get to see it or talk about it.
Yeah, I even if it wasn't your birthday episode, I would have said no to that, because I'm like, I have not seen a single Planet of the Apes movie, and I feel like there's so much going on, and I'm not about to like make an attempt to get into that.
Like 200 years after the last reboot trilogy.
I don't want to know that. I can't know any facts about Planet of the Apes.
Yeah, well, I think The Fall Guy is probably better than the Planet of the Apes movie. Definitely better than The Idea of You. Both are worth seeing, though. And frankly, I'm disappointed that more people haven't shown up for The Fall Guy, because I think that is the kind of celebratory, fun, you know, moment you want to have in theater. It's basically like Barbenheimer in a single movie. So
it's also sort of shocking to me that more people didn't show up, because I feel like we're on a string of things doing well at the box office. Like Monkey Man did well, Civil War did like really well at the box office.
But those are low budget.
Well, I mean, I know, but I just like Dune obviously did well, Challengers did well. Like I feel like people are in like a movie going mindset. Like people are talking about them, and The Fall Guy got really good reviews. I legitimately think the issue with why people haven't gone seen this is because of the trailers. Because I saw, or at least the first, whatever trailer I saw of this movie and the promotional stuff ahead of time, I was like, what is this? This looks weird. Like, I don't really want to go see this.
I know, you had low hopes for this. And I was like, this looks fun. And you're like, yeah, okay, fine. I've heard good things. That was a while ago. But yeah, I think I'll do a poll and see if we convinced anyone to go see it who wouldn't have seen it otherwise. So, doing the Lord's work.
Luckily, we have next week we have your birthday episode, and then we have a week off. But then the thing we have to look forward to coming up is Furiosa, which I cannot imagine does poorly in theaters, unless it's bad.
Yeah.
But even if it's bad, I think a lot of people still go see it. People are excited for that.
Yeah. And then Twisters, right? When is that?
Yes, I don't think Twisters comes out until July. I think we're gonna have another couple of dud weeks in there in June before we get there. There's Inside Out 2 coming. Oh, there's the new Quiet Place. I forgot about that.
Oh, I'm excited for that. I'm excited for that.
I think we're gonna have to do an episode on Maxine.
No, we have to do an episode on A Quiet Place.
Well, yeah, no, that too.
Oh, okay. What's Maxine?
They're not coming out the same. Maxine is the third in the X Pearl
I didn't watch any of those.
Horror Child. Well, it's perfect. Exactly. I'll explain.
No. Unless you're going to do the Planet of the Apes.
We can't. I would love to. I was just saying how much I would love to Planet of the Apes, but we can't because of your birthday.
Yeah, okay. Well,
I'm just I'm my birthday. Forlorn. Yeah, I'll rewrite to it. Do.
It's good.
To do Dawn of the Virgin of the Planet of the Apes.
Yeah, I don't know. The idea of the Planet of the Apes.
The idea of anybody but the Planet of the Apes. Yeah. Okay. Well, yeah. Hopefully we'll get some more good rom-coms in the future. Here's the real question. Was The Idea of You better or worse than what was the Camila Mendes rom-com where she works in the, where she also was an art dealer? That I watched Upgraded. Oh yeah,
because I frankly enjoyed Upgraded dynamics more, but probably The Idea of You, I guess.
Marissa Tomei was incredible in Upgraded. I would say the Marissa Tomei in Upgraded was better than any performance in either of these movies.
Well, and the Upgraded love interest, he was not doing it for me. Talk about like boring.
Yeah.
So I guess at least Sad Harry Styles is like there.
Yeah, he's a good actor, I think. He's in everything right now.
What's his last name?
Galitzine, I think.
Galitzine.
I'm not sure.
Yeah.
I struggle to sort of see his longevity as an actor, but he is in a lot of things currently. Take.
You're like, this is a true boy band style, one hit wonder kind of phased life for him. That's what you're picturing.
Yeah, I don't.
He's the Liam Tomlinson of One Direction.
Louis Tomlinson.
I don't remember their name. Liam is one. Liam.
What is his last name? Niall Horan, Zayn Malik, Louis Tomlinson, Liam. What is Liam's last name?
Hedges.
Liam Payne. That's what it is. Liam Payne and Harry Styles. There we go. Da-ding. My sister would be proud of me.
Yeah. Do you think Olivia Wilde watched this movie?
That is a good question. Do we think Harry Styles watched this movie?
Harry Styles probably watched it with all his friends and made fun of it.
I don't know if Harry Styles strikes me as somebody who's watching movies.
He doesn't even know how to describe what a movie is.
But I guess
it's a movie.
The thing about being a famous person is that you, on the one hand, have like absolutely no free time, but on the other hand have like all the free time in the world. So I could sort of have seen, I feel like he and Olivia Wilde have probably both watched this movie at this point.
Yeah, and then texted each other like, it'll see you in 5 years, I'll be there.
Yeah, because are they broken up currently?
They broke up during the Don't Worry Darling press tour.
I feel like it was sort of like, I couldn't tell.
No, they were definitely broken
up. Okay.
Interesting. Yeah, they're over.
Maybe they're back together. Well, then if they're broken up, then I feel like she definitely watched this and was like crying at the 5 year part. And she was like, oh my gosh.
I don't think so. I don't know. Yeah. Weird, 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 weird. Anyways, that's it.
And next week we'll be back talking about a real queen of the rom-com, Kirsten Dunst.
Yeah, you've got some homework to do.
Yeah, well, I mean, we both do. She's been in.
Yeah, no, I've been churning through her serious auteur movies that you've seen, and you have to watch all the fun ones that I've seen. So
yeah, no, I'm excited. That's my main weekend homework, is to watch a bunch of Kirsten Dunst movies.
Good for you.
I'm getting psyched to see Bring It On.
Yeah. Exactly.
After it, the thing is, if we do this long enough, we'll have seen every movie. Because I was like, oh, I've already seen Interview with the Vampire, because we did the Tom Cruise episode a couple of years ago.
Oh yeah, it's like the 5 degrees of Kevin Bacon or whatever,
right? And then it's like, oh well, I saw Power of the Dog because, you know, we did Oscar episodes and things like, and then we did the Civil War episode, so I had to go see that. So really,
I know.
Yeah,
I know.
All the Sofia Coppola movies we get to talk about. I'm so excited. Okay, well, thank you everyone for listening. Go watch both of these movies. They're both good. And we'll see you back here next week. Bye.